This episode of Critical Hit is being brought to you by Harry's. Please visit harrys.com and use the promo code CRITICALHIT to save $5 off your first purchase. Hi everyone, Steven Schleicher here. Just a couple of quick announcements. First, if you've been looking for some Modern City merchandise, we have it over at the Major Spoilers store at majorspoilers.bigcartel.com. We've got some pint glasses, we've got some coasters, and of course we have Critical Hit coasters, dice bags, t-shirts, all sorts of stuff. You can find those at majorspoilers.bigcartel.com. You guys ready for the weekend? I know I am, and I know many of you start your weekend off with a new episode of Critical Hit. I start my weekends off by shaving. I'm one of those once-a-week shavers, sometimes twice a week. It's not that I don't like shaving, it's just that, I don't go a whole lot of places. That's why on Saturday mornings when I wake up, I reach for my Harry's razor, and I get to work on the beard growth that has happened during the week. And oh man, by the time that I'm done, I feel so, so good. Using a Harry's razor is so awesome, because Harry's makes their own blades. They like this German company that's been making their blades, that they went ahead and just bought the entire factory. These are high-quality, high-performance German blades crafted by shaving experts. And because they own the factory, they don't have to worry about increasing the cost and passing that on to consumer like a lot of other companies do. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to wait in line for somebody to come and unlock a cabinet, open things up so you can get your razor blade and go. Why are you paying $32 for 8 packs of blades when it's half the price over at Harry's? Did you know, I found this out the other day, that those of us who shave every day, we can save about $150 a year on blades using Harry's razors. Wow, that's a lot. Now, for those of us who shave once a week, hey, maybe the savings is a little bit less, but still, $150 on blades, that is great. Here's one of the cool things. They have this starter set. It's for $15. You get the razor, which I just love the shape of the razor, the design of the razor. The blades are great. You get some moisturizing shave cream, which is good. And then you get 3 razor blades. And you can swap those out. And again, depending on how often you shave, you may have those last you several weeks or months. You can get those for $15, but check this out. Today, you can get them for $10. Go to harrys.com right now, and Harry's will give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code CRITICALHIT with your first purchase. That's HARRYS.com. Enter the coupon code CRITICALHIT at checkout for $5 off. Start shaving better today. I can't think of a better way to start the weekend than by going to harrys.com, getting started on this set. I know some of you have gone out there and said that you've been happy with your Harry's purchase that you made through our Critical Hit link, and I thank you for your support. These are great razors, great shaving, great way to start your day, your weekend, whatever it may be. Thank you, harrys.com, for sponsoring this episode of Critical Hit. One final note before we get into this week's episode. If you're looking for the character sheets for the characters that we are playing here on the Fate system, they are available right now at members.majorspoilers.com. You have to be a silver member and higher to get access to those. They're a simple one sheet, but, you know, I know a lot of you have been asking for them, but that's where they are. All of them are there. Professor Disaster King, Free Agent, Jetstar, Rumblebee, all over there. And with the new season of the main Critical Hit storyline just around the corner, new character sheets for those folks, those who are returning, and maybe some new things. Or not. Who knows? We'll be over there as well. Don't want to say too much because I don't want to ruin the surprise. But you're definitely going to want to stick around when the new season kicks off because it's going to be a lot of fun. All right. That's it for this week. I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you to all of our Major Spoilers VIPs. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to everyone who shares this episode with a friend. Thank you to everyone who sits down and listens to this show with a group of friends before they do their own gaming session. Thank you to everybody who sends us emails at podcast@majorspoilers.com. And thank you to everybody who uses the comment section at majorspoilers.com. We really enjoy reading all of your feedback. And now, without further ado, let's get into this episode. So we just finished wrapping up this fight in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, so there were like 10 goons.
There were.
Against the four of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these big sonic weapons of a plus four.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we won.
Yes.
But that seemed somewhat overpowered. How in the fate system, in Dungeons & Dragons, when we play that, there's this formula of how many XP you're supposed to spend based on the level, and spread it out, pick your monster, and boom. How mm-hmm. do you do that in the fate system to where it's not too easy and not incredibly difficult to destroy your party?
I mean, there is the challenging part. Largely, you're supposed to just assign the attributes. And, I mean, with Fate Accelerated Edition, your standard goon is just supposed to have, like, something that he's good at, so he gets a plus 2 to that, and something he's bad at, minus mm-hmm. 2. That seems to be a little under-effective from what I was seeing, so I did try to go for some souped-up power here to make mm-hmm. them a legitimate challenge. I mean, what I'm realizing is that what I need to do to increase the challenge is actually utilize the fate points that I get to make goons tougher or hit harder. Rather than
situationally.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, because you never tagged any of my consequences. You didn't tag my consequences. You didn't tag Matthew's consequence.
That's true.
But if you did, that would have made this fight, I mean, it seemed relatively fast, but this fight would have been much more consequential to the heroes.
Yes.
Right.
And, I mean, that is supposed to be a back and forth. That is a part of the system mm-hmm. that I just need to get in the mindset of using more.
Another thing that helps there is to have kind of predetermined aspects that are usually going to be mm-hmm. detrimental to the party, right?
Yes.
So this...
the sound cannons.
No. What I mean is, like, this place could have had some sort of defense system or something like that.
Okay.
So it's just like... On top of all this stuff, we're dodging lasers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So anytime somebody does a good roll, Brian can say, well, also lasers.
Mm. But also
and that,
lasers.
And that way, he could have not had goons with such big pools.
Yeah.
But basically simulated that plus four in situations where he felt it would be dramatically appropriate.
Or it could have pushed the edge one way or the other to make things.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, it wasn't even that...
But
big of a problem, I thought, because the goons had a huge attack, but mm-hmm. actually a below PC
they
level had, defense.
Yeah, basically
so
zero defense.
Yeah. So they went down pretty fast.
You didn't have anything to add on to any defense.
And that was
case.
By design. They were supposed to be, just highly
powerful,
offensive.
Glass jaw type people.
Yes.
Because that's the one thing that I looked at when I was counting it up as you first launched it, and then we saw that they had these plus fours. I was like, wow, this is a...
Yeah.
This can really take the party down quickly mm-hmm. if you're not careful. So, I mean, why 10? Why not 8? Why not 15?
Largely just because I'm trying to get a feel for what's a good number.
Oh, okay.
There is no real metric.
Yeah, that's the one. I guess that's the one thing that is, as I'm still trying to learn the system and reading through the rule books and everything, that's the one thing that is still kind of seems like a and I don't mean bad GM as in poor quality GM, but a evil GM could just very quickly say, I'm throwing 10 guys at you, and they all have this with it just as a plus 4, and then they all have...
Yeah, but you can do that in Dungeons & Dragons,
well,
too.
Well, you could, but I mean, if you're using those... If you're using that XP table like you should, that keeps you from throwing Tiamat into the middle of a level 2 fight.
Sure, but it's the same thing with Fate, because Fate says... You know, throw guys that get a plus 2 at this if they're minions.
Mm-hmm.
Brian was trying something a little different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there are rules for that.
Right.
It's just the rules are a lot more, I don't know.
Loose?
I guess.
Yeah.
Less
it,
defined?
It feels like it's more of an instinctual thing rather than heavily codified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's nothing preventing you from throwing in a bad guy that has a plus 8 to stuff.
Yeah.
But... Then you couldn't.
That's
you would you'd never
scale,
be able to dent
though.
Them. It's literally off
right,
the scale.
Right. Right.
Well, it's the top of the scale, but you'd be rolling off the scale.
And an evil GM can throw whatever he wants at you, no matter what system it is. Mm-hmm. An evil GM is going to be an evil GM.
Okay. An evil GM can just roll fudge dice against you in D&D and just be like, "Well this seems appropriate." It's like you got like a plus 4, so you're dead.
Yeah. So I also we've not encountered it, but Rob started hitting some consequences.
Yes.
Minor, and then moderate, and then dead, or down?
Severe.
Severe.
Okay.
And then With the Fate Core rules, there is an even higher one you can take to soak up a lot of damage, but that would be more or less like a permanent injury that you would have for quite some time.
Okay.
But
at what point... It'd be like if a skeleton exploded and you lost your arm.
So at what point then would any of us go down?
Basically, what you can always choose to do is to take yourself out of the fight after you've accounted for all damage that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
But you're basically saying that therefore you're at the privy of whatever your opponents want. Like,
if I read that passage recently, and I mean, if you're ruling it differently, that's cool. Yeah. But what I understood from it is basically, let's say that you have your 2 and your 3 stress done, and you're fighting somebody who does regularly get a +4 to things, and they've got their magic gun leveled at you. So you have 2 options.
Mm-hmm.
Your first option is to say, okay, I am out of this fight. And you get to decide how that happens. It could very well be he blasts you through the window, and then we don't see what happens to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Or you could say, I let the chips fall where they will, or let the dice roll, and then you will determine what happens. And if they do take you out, then it is them who decide what happens
but
to you.
But that's the thing. If things look grim for you, you can give in or concede, but you have to say what you're doing before your opponent rolls their dice.
Ah, right.
Okay,
So that's the gamble,
that's giving
right?
in,
It's like you could dodge it. They could roll poorly.
Yeah.
But this way you're saying, okay, well, I take myself out of it, and you know, then the option is yours, right? Mm-hmm. You can retreat to fight another day, or you can be, I don't know, like, awesomely punched into a pool full of sharks, but the sharks don't kill you
On the plus side,
you have to decide how I want.
If you give in and you take yourself out of the fight, you do get 1 fate point for conceding and 1 fate point for each consequence you took in the conflict. This is your chance to say, you win this round, but I'll get you next time. You get a tall stack of fate points to back it up. That's interesting.
That's true.
If you're taken out, you can no longer act in the scene. Whoever takes you out narrates what happens to you. It should make sense based on how you got taken out. Your head explodes.
Okay, so yeah, basically if you end up with all of your consequences and your stress marked out, and you still have more damage coming in, then you are taken out of the fight.
Okay.
And then however you're taken out is going to be at the discretion of your opposition.
And so a severe consequence, is that a permanent injury, you said?
No, there's an even higher one in the core rule. It's not detailed in Fate Accelerated Edition. But no, consequence is something that's going to last for
just
several
the scenario.
Sessions.
Yeah, this one says severe scenario, clear it at the end of a scenario. Provided it makes sense within the story.
Yeah, they do make the assumption that a scenario is going to last over several sessions.
Ah, so your entire...
So the end of this, like, basically when we're going to stop playing this game, that's when a severe consequence would go away.
Basically, severe consequence would go away at the end of a...
an arc, as opposed
to at the end of an
issue. A mild consequence, it says clear at the end of the scene, provided you get a chance to rest. Moderate consequence clear at the end of the next session, provided it makes sense within the story.
The next session?
The next session. Interesting. So we could still, if we were at the point of this recording, if we still had a couple more hours to play, then that would still
that
stick
would still
around.
Be on it, but also it would be all over the entirety of the next session.
Yeah, at the end of your next session. That's
going on. Yep. You know, Rob took a moderate consequence.
So he's got tinnitus.
So he's going to have this over the entirety of the next session.
Oh, man, I hope the Cutlasses don't play, because he's not going to be able to hear the quarterback.
Ooh. It's just ringing. His hearing will come back. He just has like severe ringing.
Yeah, that's
which will probably
bad.
Give him like bad sleep. He won't be able to sleep very well, and
a little bit of a loss of
hearing.
But if he had gone completely deaf, that would be something that you would clear at the end of the scenario. If it was a severe consequence,
that'd be an even bigger one. That'd be one of those.
Or that's the thing is. Sometimes narratively, something big could be a mild consequence, right? Mm-hmm. Like he is completely deafened for a scene.
Yes.
Which is actually what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
He is like on it, like his arm is immobile for a scene. Mm-hmm. That would be a big, you know, when you go into like your bigger consequences, you don't necessarily want them to be both persistent
and severe.
And severe. So it's like if, for example, something like that, he would have maybe permanent ringing in his ears. Mm. If something is like a physical injury, you want him to be like, now he has a trick knee, right, as opposed to he lost his leg.
Yes.
True. Okay, so, all right. What were you going to say, Rob?
Oh, I was just going to mention, I don't exactly like session as a time limit.
Mm. Why not?
Well, one session.
Fortunately for you, you took one. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. One session can be weeks of in-game time on occasion.
Sure.
Or one session could be like this one was maybe 24 hours of in-game time.
Mm-hmm.
Our next one could be a few hours as we track down the Delacroix.
True.
Fight them, and deal with some scenario with their head of the Delacroix.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be one session, which could be like 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, since session isn't an in-game time measurement.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I understand why they use it, because, you know, you don't really have, like, you can't say, like, five scenes or whatever, and scenario makes sense, because scenario is an in-game time measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Session, like, I understand why it's used, but it's still a flavor disconnect for me.
I love it. I think it's the only time measurement that makes sense in role-playing games.
True, but I mean, it's a major penalty, though.
Then you have a session, and it is so much easier to keep track of that, because if something hits you for 24 hours, then you are like, okay, how much freaking time actually passed?
Yes.
And then you get into arguments, and I was like, okay, so we were waiting for this guy, and then somebody went out to get food, so that would have been like 2 hours. How long did it take to get food? 3 hours. If it's something lasts a scene, then at the beginning of the next scene, when you're getting ready, it's already gone.
Yeah, it's kind of like in D&D, if a character comes down with like lycanthropy, and now you have to freaking track moon.
Yeah, moon cycles.
Yeah,
exactly. And actually, again, you know, and we will receive a flood of emails just for this comment. Like, that's a big reason why I like 4th edition, because they went to encounters, right?
Yes.
It's like something lasts for an encounter, as opposed to a certain amount of turns or hours or something like that. Or a save ends it, you know, something active can end it.
Yeah.
As opposed to some other spells in previous editions, and actually I believe in D&D Next, that are also like, you know, hours equal to your level, and then you're like, crap, how many hours have actually passed since I cast this?
Or worse yet, is minutes to your level, because then you're like rushing from fight to fight to try to make use of that power.
What were you going to say, Matthew?
This also, narratively, this adds kind of a little bit of, it's the same randomness that Rob doesn't like is what I do like about it, because let's say, you know, Joe's deafness lasts for a session. That session is two fight scenes and an evening at Rumblebee's house. Or if it's something else, you know, if Jetstar has something that is going to stick around, that session, since we do like 5 hour recording, could be the equivalent of 3, 4, 5 days. It kind of gives a little bit more of the comic book storytelling flow.
Well, and it's
really just kind of,
that is what it is. It's that dramatic flow, right? When a character gets injured, like think about like a character in an action TV show that gets injured, and then they show up the next day in a cast, but by the third episode, they're probably not in a cast anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like maybe the right amount of time passed, maybe not. But also, when you're watching TV, you see the guy in a cast, and you're like, I can't believe that, you know, Booth is still in a cast.
Mm. Right.
Because for you, it's been 3 weeks, you know, as you're watching it.
And
for the characters, maybe it hasn't been that long. But
the beginning of the episode anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like this, too. It says when you're building mooks, these guys that we were fighting, they can have 0, 1, or 2 boxes in their stress track, depending on how tough you imagine them to be. And again, that's all up to the GM to decide how many stresses they are. And again, this is something you don't have to reveal if you want to or not, but it seems like the mooks we fought have all had at least 2 stresses on each one of them.
I think
not everyone.
The first group that we fought had 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So, the first group that I fought definitely had one.
Zombie Gators definitely had two.
These guys had two.
But you wouldn't go up any higher than that, right? I mean, or would you say,
Four mooks.
Okay. Another way to handle it, too, which the book talks about, and I think Fate Core goes a little bit more into detail with, is handling them as mobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So definitely when you have, like, in this situation, if you had a supervillain and he had 20 mooks with him, you might break them down into two mobs, just an amorphous set of stats that you just keep punching ninjas and they keep coming until you run out of boxes and then you're out of ninjas.
Yeah, Fate Accelerated does have a thing dealing with groups of mooks, is the way they call it, or gang of thugs. Yeah. In this case, the example that they give, gang of thugs, axe handles and crowbars, skilled +2, ganging up, scaring innocent people, bad, -2 at thinking ahead, fighting when outnumbered. They have 2 stress boxes for thugs.
Yeah.
So, presuming that you took out 2 thugs with enough of the stress, then the other 2 would just dissipate or whatever, run off or something.
Well, no. I mean, it's like
you still would have to fight them.
You, like, take 2 thugs out a punch, right?
Yeah, right.
If you do 1 stress, you took out 2 of them.
Right.
Yeah. Or you took out 1 of them and, the rest run away. Like, that's the thing is, it gives you... It both gives you that... opportunity, and it also forces you to deal with it narratively, right? So, for example, because you can do that, if Rumblebee flies in and punches a guy for 1 box, then 1 guy went down.
Right.
If Jetstar ran over the mob, then maybe he took a couple of them down, or just injured all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Couldn't that be the other way around, where it's like 2 stress boxes, or... You know, there's 4 thugs with 2 stress boxes apiece. So to take out all 4 thugs, you have to deal 8 damage, but it doesn't take any, you know, like 2 or 3 hits will take out a thug.
Sure.
You could. I mean, that'd definitely be...
I mean, there's
no rules. I mean,
you can describe it any way you want.
It's kind of like... I mean, as I mentioned to these guys previously between sessions, like the initial way I was considering doing the meetup, the fallout from that between Professor Disaster King and the McClaneys was basically using the combat mechanics, but actually represent like a car chase where the actual stress boxes would represent like the individual trucks. If you did 3 damage, that knocks out 1 of them. 2-1 and so whenever you would do damage to them, you're actually creating an advantage on them to gain a lead, and your actual attacks to mark the stress bosses would be to make distance.
So we've been
kind
dealing...
of flipping it to use those mechanics.
Yeah, it is hard though with superheroes though, because like our first really impulse is like, well, punch it's just em. A bunch of mooks. We can probably punch them out. If I may, in the future for like a superhero thing, I would actually recommend reversing that.
Okay.
Instead of the mooks chasing us, generate a chase where we're chasing them.
Ah, good call.
Because that's what superheroes do, right? They chase after the bad guys. Usually the bad guys don't chase after them.
So there is something that we haven't really done to an extent is... essentially the same thing as a skills challenge, right? Where instead of fighting, it's like, okay, you guys are sneaking through this warehouse. There's a key code panel up ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, Rumblebee has to use his powers to figure out the code to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you can do those kinds of things too, right?
And to a certain degree. And this is like nothing.
No. Right.
You know, the fact that we haven't done anything like that has made it so that, for example, my character, and I would say more or less to the same degree Jetstar, tend to come to the forefront because Forceful and Flashy are great in a fight. But Careful and Clever, not always as helpful. So
Careful is useless in a fight.
I think there's probably ways to do it, but what you have to do is talk to Brian about it and see where his definition of careful lies. Because that's actually a huge deal in Fate, and especially Fate Accelerated.
Yeah.
You have to figure out what your game master wants out of your approaches.
That's true.
Because you might be like, I'm going to make a guy like this. And then because it's so open to interpretation, the first moment you're like, I do this, your game master's like, I don't think so. I think your concept is completely invalid, actually. Like, that's the thing. Your game master's opinion can just completely destroy your concept, which is why you should work with them to figure something out. And if it's just not going to work out in that sense, then ask them if you can just flip your approaches. And hopefully, I mean, they should be pretty, you know, reasonable about that. It's like, well, I can never bring my highest approach to bear. That's a good enough reason to swap mid-game.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I guess, what I'm looking at now is that you guys have used your aspects in combat.
Yeah.
When I created my aspects, they were like, well, I've got Tech Genius Rumblebee, right? But we were able to create a stunt out of that. But, like, whatever happened to the Man of Today, those kinds of things we haven't been able to use yet.
Sure. Yes. And that's another place where social situations are a bigger deal.
Right.
Like, I haven't used any of my aspects because all of my aspects are social.
Mm. Okay. All right.
You did tag the Thousand Ghosts once.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
I believe.
Because you've asked them a couple questions.
Well, I don't know if he tagged them because
that was just in discussion.
That was, in role play. So, I mean, none of my things usually work in a fight.
Yeah.
Which is good, probably, because my powers are very, like, my character just performs excellently in a fight.
Mm-hmm,
just because of where the stats fell.
Yes.
On the flip side, we haven't been compelled at all.
That's true, too.
Where I felt like you could have compelled me either way. When Jetstar came and showed up, you could have used either my star running back or my for the greater good to compel me one way or the other.
So how does that there? How does that? So let's just take a look at that. How does that work? Does the GM just say, "Oh, Rob, but remember the greater good," and then you instantly have to say, "Oh, okay, well I have to go," or is there a role that happens?
No,
there's
no role. What happens is basically I would offer Rob a fate point and go, "Well, this would be for the greater good if he skipped out of practice."
I see.
And then he would either have to accept that fate point and go along with that, or pay one back to cancel.
Oh, I see. I see. That's interesting. Yes. That's interesting.
You should.
I think we maybe have touched on it in episode, or maybe it was something out of episode. What about leveling up? What are milestones?
Milestones, they are basically just... at certain points, if I feel that a milestone has been achieved, they are. That's basically how you level up. If like a minor or major milestones,
right? They have minor milestones and significant milestones, major milestones. But,
I mean, is there anything like actually permanent that you get with the minor milestone though? Because
minor milestone says switch the rating of any two approaches, rename one aspect that isn't your high concept, exchange one stunt for a different stunt, choose a new stunt.
Oh, okay, but you have to spend a refresh point for it.
I mean, it works normally.
Yes.
Yeah, a minor milestone is just like retraining, basically.
Pretty much any particular session, I would say we more or less reached a minor milestone, but since I would just in general allow you those options anyways.
Right.
I was going to say the choose a new stunt one seems like the only one that's an actual...
And even then, you're still paying with your refresh for it.
It takes a major milestone to gain an additional refresh, I believe, right?
Major milestone. Take an additional point of refresh, which you may immediately use to purchase a stun if you wish. Rename your character's high concept. That's optional.
Yes.
But you can do all of those. You can do those two things at a major milestone. At a significant milestone, if you have a sphere consequence that has been around for at least two sessions, you can clear it. Raise the bonus of one approach by one. Ooh, so... That means that you could take like clever and increase it.
Yes.
So if you're already at three, does that then increase to four?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because that was the one thing. That was the other thing that I wasn't super clear about was how those numbers grow.
Right. So in terms of critical hit, at the end of Lords of the Feywild, Orym would have been able to get a +1 to his clever.
Yes.
Okay.
Those will be pretty few and far between, and
for a significant milestone.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's minor, major, significant.
Yes.
No, it is minor, significant, major is the way it's listed here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
That's interesting. And so it says usually concludes at the end of a scenario or conclusion of a big plot event, which we haven't reached a big plot event yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I the more I learn and the more I play with this fate system, the more I really kind of dig it just because of its open nature.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But coming from a I don't want to say confined, but coming mm-hmm. from a more strict rule-based
yep.
system.
Especially 4th edition is the most codified version of D&D.
Yes.
Yep.
Too. So, I mean, you started in about as...
Yep. You started in about as small a box as possible,
but you
with
know,
like
at times, though,
larger concentric boxes, but they're still boxes.
Yeah, but at times, though, having those rules and knowing how the world works, mm-hmm. I think, really mm-hmm. helps. Mm-hmm. So that's
absolutely.
One nice
yeah.
thing about a yeah. system like 4th edition or whatever version of yeah. D&D that people
there's
are playing.
There's definitely there's a give and take on those. Mm-hmm. There's
I mean,
being a more open system is both a feature and a bug of Fate.
Sure.
It is, yeah, it can be...
Yeah.
A lot of people feel like it's way too loose, that there's not any real mechanical...
D&D is great as a lingua franca, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can always fall back on the rules.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If there's an argument, you can always... You read them, Rob reads them, I read them, Brian
yeah,
reads
yeah.
them, Matthew reads them,
mm-hmm.
and there's probably going to be a consensus about how it's supposed to be.
Right, mm-hmm. right, right.
In Fate, there isn't. You're just kind of like, well, I think I should be able to do this, and your game master has to be like,
well, and that's
well,
why I said in that last session, because I was building that sonic bomb,
yeah. mm-hmm.
I didn't know if that also allowed me to lob it or attack it or anything else, or if I would have had to spend one round building the device, second round attacking with the device.
This is all effect-based.
Right, right.
Right? Yeah. In the end, what do you want to do? Do you want to create an advantage? Do you want to attack? Do you want to remove an advantage? Do you
mm-hmm.
want to remove like an impediment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or something like that? Or create one?
Mm-hmm.
So always keep that in mind when you're doing stuff. So when you apply that to what you wanted to do,
right.
building this device would have done nothing for you.
Right.
So mm-hmm. in one turn, you should presumably be able to both build the device and lob it so that one action gives you one attempt at creating
right,
an advantage.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. right.
Unless, you know, you're like doing something that would cause like a bigger, more long-term effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were like, I'm going to build a device that knocks everyone out. Again, that's not really building an advantage. That's causing damage. And
mm-hmm.
you can get into issues with that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, if you think about it as what effect do I want to get out of this,
yeah.
it makes it a lot easier to just create that scenario that you want to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Matthew, do you have any questions about anything that we've done? Because you and I don't think I've ever played Fate before, right?
No, but it's similar to things that I have played. And I do agree, as a player who throughout our D&D experiences has said, can I do X?
Right.
And been told, well, the mechanics don't necessarily. I really like the ability to say, I'm going to do X.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian can say, well, if you can justify this and if this works, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can definitely see where that would be problematic, especially if mm-hmm. you're expecting, if you come in with the expectation that the game is going to tell you how to play it.
Yeah.
Which this game really doesn't.
No.
And
kind of a go and have fun with your friends kind of thing.
And I would say, honestly, that is more the environment that I'm more familiar with and I'm mm-hmm. coming from. So this is mm-hmm. a bit of an adjustment period doing Fate
yeah.
on a more long-term basis. There's still things I need to utilize better. And
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
This is most definitely the longest Fate game we've managed.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and, well, and we'll do a complete wrap-up of...
before. Now you have Jetstar.
We'll do yes. a complete wrap-up and analysis of Fate Accelerated, at least, in mm-hmm. a couple of weeks. And we'll talk about, how you can make sure that Modern City Tales continues after this. But I just because of this battle and the way that I had seen it set up, mm-hmm. I just had a lot of questions that I was
yeah.
hoping to get answered. And I think you guys answered them. I think that clears up a lot of things for me. And I know this is a shorter episode this week, listeners, but hopefully you learned a little bit more about Fate. I know that since we began playing the Fate system, many of you have gone out and checked it out from, Evil Hat Productions,
yep.
and have either purchased it or have started playing it, or some of you who have played it have jumped on, and I really appreciate the comments there. But for those of you who are still unclear of how mobs and monsters and goons and whatever are, mm-hmm. are created, hopefully that gives you a little bit understanding of behind the curtain or behind the GM screen
right.
of this game.
You got a mob actually has two separate parts. There's the Silo and the Cujo. And when you put them together, you have a mob.
Okay. Mm. All right. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. And we will see you next week to see what happens when we probably confront the Delacry.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Enjoy your games, everybody. Have fun around your game table. And until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are plus, 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 plus. Yeah, plus. Convince your GM about that.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.